Prime ministers
and presidents
may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive
and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition
remains.
Mike Pence is president of the United States after years of divisive, dogmatic control by Donald Trump. The country is in turmoil as the Republicans have strengthened their stronghold on Congress, increasing their dominance. And with the support of the Supreme Court, more conservative than ever. Is it some Philip K. Dick version of alternate history? Or is it part of And the Last Trump Shall Sound, a collection of three fantastic novellas by Harry Turtledove, James Morrow, and the awesomely talented Kat Rambo, who's with us now?
I am good. Delighted to be here. Thank you very much. Well, it was very weird writing something that is so close in time, to the point where it was almost paralyzing. But I said to myself, okay, it's fiction, and went with it and stopped trying to reflect reality, which was good, because in the time between when I turned in my section and I got the copy edits back, that was between February and April of this year. And holy cow, a certain amount of stuff happened in between those 2 months. It's hard. I mean, I was just talking actually to William Gibson and said, how is the writing going? And he said, it is going terribly, because of course the space that he's writing in is just a year or two out, and he's facing the same difficulty where stuff keeps happening. But at the same time, the thing about science fiction is, while it pretends to be about the future, it's really about the times that we are living in now. And that's what this book is about. Yeah. And you know.
And as the ancient Chinese curse once said, may we live in interesting times.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, over the last 20 years, I mean, literally 9/11 clearly set an unfortunate tenor for the 21st century. We've kind of gone through it. Most of us are still, you know, functioning within acceptable parameters. We're working through that process. I've said in the past to many science fiction writers and authors, and indeed to students, that science fiction can often act as a prophylactic against future shock. In this instance, though, I mean, some of the things that we're seeing in real life, and certainly you're absolutely right, Kat, that any author, any writer, whether it's science fiction or whether it's romance, whatever the genre, although obviously I have a fondness for science fiction in particular, but it does tend to reflect the time at which it's being written, whether it's Ursula K. Le Guin in the 1960s, Octavia Butler in the 80s, 90s, and so on, William Gibson, of course, in the 80s. Is that something where when you were seeing this narrative unfold from the point of view of the political situation in both the United States and, of course, in Britain, are you often sort of forced with sort of thinking, I'm going to have to pinch myself, this cannot be real?
Oh, for sure. I mean, this whole year has been, as you compared it to Philip K. Dick, and it does feel very Dickian, as one would say. It's interesting writing about politics right now, because it's such a divisive issue. But one of the things that I tried to address in my novella is my feeling that this is not about right versus left or black versus white or anything like that. It's about the rich versus the poor. And that's what's happening right now, is you're seeing a move by the rich to consolidate their power, I think. And that is, I think, the thing that we need to remember, is that there's a lot of stirring up of people against each other in a way that is very divisive, when we should be looking in other directions to see what's going on.
Yeah, I'm often brought to mind of the Gene Roddenberry philosophy in Star Trek, and I wonder what he would think of the original Star Trek, of course. I wonder what he would think of where we are now. I think he might have sort of suspected that, you know, we're still very much in the kindergarten when it comes to actually working out our own challenges and differences, let alone, you know, addressing, you know, the planetary issues that are actually there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Jessica, hopefully you can actually unmute yourself, because I noticed you had unmuted yourself a few seconds ago. If you're there, you might have one or two things to actually add. If not, we will just continue the conversation. Jessica, how are you?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, it's all, you see, positive vibes, that's the whole thing. I felt at the end of the day, if we all send out positive vibes and reboot the system, all will be well. So Jessica, questions for
Kat. The internet. Yes, I was wondering what you hope readers will take away from this the most and will remember about what you've written through all the stories.
I hope that they will remember that we're all in this together, that the way that the world changes is through individuals cooperating rather than particular leaders doing things. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
It does, yes. Yes, I think there's so much division right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jessica, I was just addressing this question directly to yourself because Kat and myself are kind of similar children of the 60s without sort of giving any sort of major names or details away from that. But Jessica, you're very much at the start of this whole great adventure, obviously. You're 19, 20, 21, is that what mm-hmm. in terms of the age system from that? So, you know, what are your thoughts on the kind of environment that, you know, what for so long was very much seen as an ideal state to aim for? Although, having said that, America, as we pointed out, has had its challenges in the past, be it McCarthy, be it Civil War, be it Nixon, and so on and so forth. I just think, you know, it's difficult to really sort of see anything to this extent where the divisiveness has been there. But what are your own thoughts, Jessica, as part of the next generation?
I think I agree about the divisiveness. There's a distinct feeling of separation. I think even this is my first year actually voting in a presidential election now that I'm of age. And a lot of my friends are in the same place. And I think there's a lot of frustration in my generation because we're not so much represented in the media, but we're trying to figure out how we find our place in that and how we communicate with it. So I think that's kind of, we're a bit frustrated. I think just trying to figure out how we're supposed to fit in somewhere where everything is treated as separation and division.
Mm-hmm. Kat, that's a really interesting sort of line, I think, that Jessica's raised there. And I think it's something in which the artists and science fiction writers are included within that, and the creators really need to maybe look at that. And is that something that you're conscious of in terms of saying, yeah, maybe we do need to address these issues rather than actually pointing out the disastrous dystopias that are there, which clearly needs to be raised? We also need to be looking at that optimistic side of science fiction.
And there is a movement that I've become very interested in, which is hope punk, which is stories that are hopeful futures, and also are stories that are much more about community, much more about people working together rather than a sort of, you know, a chosen one who is destined to see the world. It's much more about communities, much more about groups. In fact, the book that I've got coming out next year is an ensemble rather than a single protagonist for that reason, because I think if we want to change things, we have to come up with new stories. We have to come up with stories that show people how to cooperate. We have to show people how to take care of each other, because we have a lot of stories in America that aren't about taking care of people.
It's interesting in terms of your collaborators in terms of this. Harry Turtledove, of course, often regarded mm-hmm. as the master of alternate history.
Oh, yeah.
And I think anybody who's experienced any of the Harry Turtledove material will say, yeah, absolutely. And in addition to that, of course, we've got James Morrow, who's working out from that. How was it? I mean, was it just a case of when you were putting this thing together, you said, Kat, you write your bit, James will write his bit and his story, and obviously Harry does his?
No, it was horrible because I was the last person to write a novella. So I got Harry's and I read it through. And of course, Harry, he is the master of alternative history, and it's full of thoughtful quotes from history and a lot of political stuff. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I got Jim's, and I don't, as you may know, Jim went in a totally different direction. And suddenly there's retired porn stars turned into spies and animatronic Trumps. And I was like, oh, I have to write the third novella that somehow goes with these two wildly disparate and somewhat intimidating, because let's face it, Harry Turtledove, James Morrow, celebrated figures. And that was quite a dilemma. In fact, I spent a lot of time just walking and trying to figure out what I was going to do. And so I went in a very different direction, partially because I thought that it was important to bring it back to that idea of the rich exploiting the poor.
Kat, you were clearly the cream that was going to always rise to the top. That's why they actually waited until the end. They thought, well, Kat can put the proverbial cherry on the top of this, which is very impressive from that. Jessica, any further questions you want to put to Kat? Now that we touch wood, I think the line seems to be stable, which is always good.
Yeah. I'm actually curious where you see yourself within this story, or all three of them together.
Where I see myself as a person? Well, you may have noticed the third novella is not about somebody who's a politician. It's not about somebody who's working at the highest levels of government. It's somebody who is down at the basic level, is a worker, and who doesn't have the funds to cope with changes the way a lot of people do. That's the group that I identify with. I think that that's the group that matters the most.
Mm-hmm. Science fiction has often been criticized, Kat, for being something which kind of panders to certain stereotypes, etc. Thankfully, that has changed substantially over the years. And I'm thinking of one of the most interesting dystopian fictions that I ever encountered was Sherry S. Tepper's Grass, in terms of her portrayal of a genuine alien world and so on. This almost has resonances of science fiction as satire in certain ways, going back to the whole notion of Jonathan Swift, obviously writing Gulliver's Travels as a satire against Georgian living periods at that particular time. Is this also one of those aspects that, just as Rod Serling and indeed Gene Roddenberry used their vehicles of the Twilight Zone and Star Trek to actually comment on contemporary issues using the motifs of science fiction, is that something that you also had in mind when you were producing the material for this?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. And I poked a little fun at the West Coast versus the Midwest, all those stereotypes of kind of our hippie Seattle. Yeah, no, totally. Absolutely.
I mean, clearly you were born in Texas. Jessica's over in North Carolina. Normally we have lots of links with New York and Los Angeles and so on. That the United States of America, is it, I mean, obviously it has mythological contexts to it, but is that something which is in danger of actually now it's approaching its 250th anniversary and so on. Is there something in which, you know, this is a crucial turning point? It's almost in historical terms a pivoting moment when you think we can work together collectively, as we said at the start, with Native Americans and general folk progressing for the good of all and, of course, the planet. Or is there a danger that actually, as we pointed out in the novella, maybe it might well all go to heck in a handbasket?
It's already halfway there. Absolutely. This is a terrifying future. And I'm delighted to hear Jess say that she's voting, because if we Americans do not vote in the elections, we are totally screwed. And it's quite possible that we may not get to the elections. I mean, Trump is doing stuff right now to try to sabotage the elections. Russia is, they found out Russia's actively doing stuff. We're at a terrifying moment and we have to act. That's why I wrote this book. It may be too late. I don't know.
But then again, Kat, as many people would actually say, you know, surely you're in a country where the cavalry comes over the hill at the last moment in any case. So, you know, it's never too late. We must continue that. I mean, look at our example on this little Zoom call. It started off by thinking we were doomed, but we got That's the important thing.
It's true. It's true. And I think it's really important not to lose hope. And I think that one of the things that we've seen played out in America over the past few years is an attempt to rob people of hope and to grind them down to the point where they just gave in. And I am so delighted to see young people working against that. And, you know, just there's been so much unity and people coming together. And that is the thing that is heartening. Is it going to be enough? I hope so.
Jessica, as somebody who is one of our co-presenters, of course, on Resonance Rewind, you've been looking over the last few months at a number of classic science fiction examples, The Invaders, of course, the one we looked at this week, right the way through to episodes of The Twilight Zone and so on. Do you think science fiction is a really good aspect or good area of actually evolving this, as Kat's been saying, with the writing she's been putting together?
Of kind of like commentating on kind of how life is right now.
Yeah, does it actually help actually provide an inspiration and actually a focus to actually say, okay, let's change this?
Oh, yes, definitely. I fully believe that. And maybe I'm biased because I study creative writing, but I think art is the ultimate weapon for kind of motivating change.
Art is the ultimate weapon for motivating change. I think that's almost a quote, Kat, really.
That's lovely.
Yeah, I think it's almost more positive than the line, in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump, for the trumpet shall sound, and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed, the letter to St. Paul, Corinthians, which obviously is leading this particular aspect. Kat, where can people actually get hold of And the Last Trump Shall Sound? It's obviously, we're in September now. Is it available online? Can people actually book it and get it through all the usual channels?
As of September 22nd, it is available online and hopefully at your bookstore. And I urge you to actually order it through your local bookstore and support them.
We haven't spoken about, of course, your own background, but you've been published in Asimov's, of course, Clark's World Magazine, Tor.com, and so on. Five Ways to Fall in Love on Planet Porcelain, a Nebula Award finalist. I mean, I just love the title, Kat. You know, five Ways to Fall in Love on Planet Porcelain. Presumably, if Trump had been in there, he would have smashed it all in any way, shape, or form. There'd be no porcelain left at all. But, I mean, in terms of, say, given that Jess is a creative writing student, from that point of view, I'm not going to ask the crass question, where do you get your ideas from? But in terms of the inspiration, is it just a case of you look around at what's happening and you think, yeah, let's take it down that particular line?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, ideas come all the time. They come from the news. They come from going out on walks when there's no smoke and seeing things. They come from reading. A lot of them come from reading other authors and replying to them. I think one of the things about literature is there is this wonderful kind of bizarre conversation that keeps going on, where we're sort of always talking to both the future and the past. And it's a great pleasure to be part of that.
As I've often said, you open a book, you're in a time machine of all of its own, effectively listening to voices from the past. Echoing into the future. It's intriguing as well that there are two authors in particular who I find highly influential and very lyrical, which is, again, the sort of lyricism of science fiction writers. Sometimes I feel we kind of lost a little bit, perhaps, but maybe it's going to come back. The likes of Ray Bradbury in, obviously, Martian Chronicles and Fahrenheit 451, hugely prophetic in so many ways. And likewise, even beyond that, the sort of notions of some of the early writing of Ursula K. Le Guin, as we mentioned earlier, was a sort of a focus there that really sort of opened up a sort of sense of hope as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But Le Guin doesn't pull any punches. You know, she has a short story called The Ones Who Walk Away from Omelas, which is just so influential and such a hard story to read, and which I think Le Guin took pride in the fact that she had had generations of college students ardently arguing about that story.
I'm intrigued again, just looking at the sort of online material here, to find you also donated your archive to the Department of Rare Books and Special Collections at Northern Illinois University back in the last decade.
Yes, well, that's a very useful thing for a science fiction, or for any writer, is to be able to ship boxes of papers off to someone else and know that they will be taken care of.
Indeed, indeed so. Jessica, any final questions you want to put to Kat at this moment?
I would say if you had to come up with a one-line reason why people should look into your book, what would it be?
Oh, gosh.
That's like asking for a Twitter response, Jessica. It's like asking for a tweet. And we know what happens with the President of the United States and his tweets, you know.
Oh, no.
See, the thing that stops me is most of my work, you could dip in and you could find some hope and humor. Mm-hmm. And this particular novella is somewhat uncharacteristic for me in that it does have, I think, a certain amount of humor, but I don't know that it has a great deal of hope in it. And part of it was that I was writing it at a pretty bleak time. So I don't know, find a different view of the world.
Yeah, I think that's good. I would simply say, if you want to maintain sanity, buy this book. End of. That's it. You know, just go on that basis. And The Last Trump Shall Sound is the title, written by Harry Turtledove, James Morrow, and best of all, Kat Rambo, A Future History of America. Fantastic stuff. Available literally, if you're really prompt in downloading this particular radio interview, in about 4 days from now. That's literally 80 hours, and you'll be able to actually get it then. Fantastic. Or if you're looking at the old traditional calendar and what is time, the 22nd, I believe, of September is when it's released to the world, Kat. Is that right?
That is correct.
We've got two final questions I need to put to you. In fact, I might actually even dare to open up my video on this particular aspect now. So I can just wave on that system. Because we start off with thinking, maybe show a whole routine. Don't worry, Jessica, don't worry. We're used to the whole thing on that basis in terms of North Carolina. It can be a strange world in every sense of the word. So, you know, keep safe. That's important thing. But have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic Zoomer with us today? Has it been good?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's been lovely. It's been a nice way to start the day, actually.
But I have to say that it looks as though there's a whole, I mean, again, you smashed the record for actually most interesting backdrops there. It's good to see that there's text and again, good solid author backgrounds behind you, which is wonderful. The next critical question is, I see that actually you've almost got a moving background, which is moving through the stars as well, through the galaxies. It's like Spaceship Cat, you know.
I got very lucky. They actually gave us these little porthole things for the nebulas. Yeah. But my walls in my study are turquoise, and so they pick up the color of the green screen and, in fact, the rug and all of that. It's been very serendipitous.
Exactly. And it's living the science fiction dream. You know, if H.G. Wells could see this now, he'd probably sort of say, well, I never, you know, I didn't expect those things to come, but never mind. So the final question, Kat, is will you be kind enough to return? Will you come back sometime in the near future and chat more about the state of politics in the United States and your writing, of course?
Oh, anytime you want to have me, Alex. I am delighted to appear. This has been a lot of fun.
Fantastic. Kat Rambo, huge thanks. Jessica, take care. I think Jessica, you join us for another interview later on. Fingers crossed, all being well. Take care. Keep on keeping on. And just let's maintain that positivity, folks. That's what we need. More positivity.
Bye. is inside I never could describe. Oh.
Time, defined as an alt-rock niche of poetic lyricism, jangling guitars, psych swirling melodies, and tea towel covered drum beats. And actually, it does tend to grow on one. We had been hoping to be joined by David Schur. Maybe he will join us in the course of this little Zoomer. But if not, we have got two fabulous individuals who are going to actually guide us through the next 10 or 15 minutes or thereabouts. First of all, from Birmingham, England, as we like to say, it's Katie Grimerson. How are you, Katie?
Hello, happy Friday.
Yeah, you see, people could be listening to this on a Saturday, on a Sunday, they could be listening to all sorts of things. So you're quite right. I mean, we could say that, but then, as we just said, what is time? You know, we've just been talking about alt histories of America, which could have a whole new world on the whole system, especially if you're in North Carolina, like Jessica Burtis. How are you, Jessica?
Good. How are you both?
I mean, haven't changed much since about 5 or 6 minutes ago when we were last on our last call. But other than that, I think we're okay.
I'm good, thank you.
That's the key thing. And Katie is in top form. So, Jessica, we're in this whole process of obviously sort of preparing for the autumn and so on. We've just had the news that the university has been awarded top status in terms of best young university, and that is an ideal point to hopefully welcome Alice Briner to the actual piece. And Alice might work. Yes, Alice has gone in vision for us, which is wonderful. Alice, how are you? Okay.
I'm doing amazing, thank you.
You'd like to hear, because you're going to be joining a university which, as we've just said, has been awarded by the Times and Sunday Times as number one in terms of best young university of Britain and so on and so forth. Now, we've got, as promised, we've got two fabulous souls who've had experiences of the University of Lincoln. Katie Grimmison spent 3 years there back in the day doing an American Studies degree. I say back in the day, Katie, it wasn't that long ago. When did you graduate?
Oh, do I have to say?
All right, fair enough. It wasn't the last
2014.
Century. 2014, exactly. So we've built a few more things since then. Jessica Burtis, who was actually here in Lincoln, shall we say, a little bit sooner than that. She did a term with us as one of our exchange students from North Carolina. And Jessica, you were with us just this year, of course, just in time for lockdown.
Yes.
So, critical lines. Alice has already been to Open Days. She was at a Meet the Tutor welcome week, wow week, etc. She's got back home to the joys of Sittingbourne very effectively, which is wonderful. She's all set and ready to start in a few weeks' time. Katie, first of all, what advice would you give Alice Briner?
First of all, what are you studying, Alice?
Communication and public relations.
Oh, that's cool. In terms of advice, I'd say just go out and enjoy it.
But obviously in a socially distanced way, clearly, you know, I mean, let's face it.
Yeah.
the days of actually sort of having a former experience, they've gone slightly. I mean, we will try and work through that. In fact, the first time Alice and myself met in real life, actually this term, because she had obviously encountered me at an Open Day, we were both wearing masks, which was very good, and maintained those mask wearing things for quite some time. In fact, Alice is the first student to be who's been in my office. I should have actually pointed out Alice, Jessica's flowers, of course, what was there, which were the old flowers. There, but you know, so at least we proved that it worked from that point of view. Jessica, what are your thoughts? Because you're obviously still doing your studies in an online sort of way in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. But what about your experience with respect to the University of Lincoln? Because I can say that given that Alice Briner is doing communications and public relations, she will be taking communication society in term two.
That was my favorite class of the whole semester. it was. You're going to love it, and you're going to love the university once you get there with quarantine and everything ending. I'd say just really enjoy it. It feels like university just flies.
It just flies, you see.
That's it. So try and say yes to everything that you can.
Well, it's fair to say that Alice has already made a commitment to join the Siren team and actually sort of get involved with Midweek Drivettes and various other sort of factors. So, again, Alice, any questions you'd like to put to either Katie, who has been a Midweek Drivette for, well, nigh on, what, 6 years now, Katie, I think?
Yeah, that's correct.
And Jessica, who's relatively new, but is still a seasoned pro with nigh on, I think, what, 7 or 8 months now under your belt?
Yes, 8, I think.
Yeah, just quick calculation. But then again, as we said, what is time? Alice, your chance to quiz some of your fellow peers and so on.
Oh, I don't know what to ask, honestly. I'm really bad at.
Well, let's spin it around a wee bit, because when we chatted, you said you're from Sittingbourne in Kent, and one of the challenges that I think you were faced with was something that I know Katie won't mind me saying, that sometimes you're feeling possibly a little bit homesick. So, I mean, I don't know, Katie, how did you cope with that kind of sense of homesick? I mean, I know, obviously, turning up for your academic lectures 20 to 9 in the morning was obviously very impressive for yourself, Katie. But what are your thoughts on that one?
I'm never going to live that down, am I, Alex, turning up to lectures half an hour early?
Shows commitment, Katie, shows commitment.
I was homesick in the first year because, for me, coming from Birmingham, which was, it's obviously bigger than Lincoln and really busy. And I didn't know how to feel at the start because I was like, the life pace of life is quite slower. But by year two, I actually really loved it and I settled into it. And I think if you're feeling homesick, just accept that you are at the minute and it will get better. And as you meet people, obviously socially distanced now, but as you meet people and you get into your course as well, you'll really enjoy it. And I really enjoyed my third year as well. I didn't want it to end. I was quite sad when I got to my third year and working on my dissertation. I was like, oh no, I'm going to leave soon.
Frankly, Katie, with your dissertation tutor, I don't know how you managed to get through it, but we managed it somehow. So I suppose that's the key thing. And Jessica, what about yourself? Because, I mean, obviously studying even for a term or a semester in a different country, particularly when you obviously were, it was cut short slightly with respect to the big pandemic. What are your sort of thoughts or words of advice for Alice?
I'd have to agree with Katie that, you know, if you're feeling upset or homesick, just let yourself feel that way because you will not feel that way forever. And I think the first 2 weeks are the hardest. And then after that, you forget that you were ever sad or maybe feeling a bit out of place. And then it just becomes your home. And make sure you see the swans at the Brayford. You have to feed them.
Yeah, the swans of the Brayford are a whole new world. And of course, Alice, I mean, you know, Katie says that Birmingham is quite busy, but I mean, Sittingbourne is like a metropolis compared to, I mean, the pace of life in Sittingbourne. It's just phenomenal. I mean, I don't know.
No, I'm not a fan of where I live, I will say that. I've been to Lincoln 3 times now, and Lincoln's definitely better from where I live.
Well, there we have it, you see. I mean, that could be used as a quote for next year's Times and Sunday Times survey, effectively. You know, Lincoln is better than Sittingbourne. I know it's a shocker, Katie, but, you know, what the heck?
Better than Birmingham?
Well, this is true. Really, Katie, are you saying Lincoln's better than Birmingham as well?
It is, because when I was a bit younger, I loved being in the city and a big city and the hustle and bustle of it all, but now I've been to Lincoln and I'm getting a bit older. I prefer like the more countryside and rural places.
This coming from the Midweek Drivette, who spent, I think, a good sort of 18 months or so. You must come to Birmingham. You must come to Birmingham. The closest I think we've come was when we met up in Leicester. So that was close. But what the heck, you know?
Well, you don't want to come to Birmingham at the minute.
Well, I am actually in probably one of the sole parts of the Northeast which hasn't gone into lockdown. Newcastle's gone into lockdown again. Sunderland's gone into lockdown. Northumbria's in lockdown. Middlesbrough, we've actually avoided the lockdown procedures as yet. And effectively, if I actually pull up the details of the news package that was actually here, I can actually say that, just like Lincoln, actually, why local lockdown has been avoided on Teesside so far. So, you know, we've maintained that sort of system. Of course, our manager of Middlesbrough Football Club, Neil Warnock, has actually tested positive for coronavirus, but he is in social isolation. What the hey? Jessica, talk us through what you're doing in the States now, because unlike Alice, who hasn't started as yet, because we've moved the academic year times and areas from that point of view, Jessica, how have the studies been going in terms of the delivery and so on? Is everything still online? Just talk us through a typical week that you're having.
Yes, so everything is online, and I would have 4 classes, but they're kind of all over the board, whether or not we have actual Zoomer class or not. And I'm taking some communications classes. So I think those professors are having quite a lot of fun with kind of commentating on how things are going. But it's a little bit odd. Me and my roommate say that we feel like we're at summer camp instead of being at school. It kind of just feels like a bit of summer has just been extended, which does not make it easy to manage time for assignments.
It could be more problematic. You could feel as though you're on spring break, in which case it would be a disaster. You know, what can happen on that sort of crazy thing? But you know, let's talk a little bit about your place in North Carolina, because I know Katie's obviously keen on hooking up with Phil Leonis in Los Angeles and other folk who are actually there. But Jessica, why should we say, you know, maybe Alice or indeed Katie, consider actually, you know, when we do get through this pandemic in any shape or form, why should we come and actually check out North Carolina?
Oh, it's absolutely beautiful here. I'm in the mountains right now. It's stunning, especially in the autumn. We have the beach out to the east, and we have very good food here in the south. The best food you could ever have. Biscuits and grits and sweet tea, of course. We have tons of sweet tea.
I was wondering if you'd actually mention that, because I'll throw it past both Alice and Katie, because I think it's worthwhile. Alice, have you ever encountered sweet tea?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Okay. Katie, I know you're a connoisseur of culinary matters and so on. What about yourself? Sweet tea?
No, I've never had sweet tea. The tea we drink here, I prefer builder's tea.
Builder's tea, yes. Not to be confused, obviously, with sweet tea, although there are some similarities. I mean, the original definition of a builder's tea, I think, Katie, is one in which the spoon will actually stand up without any kind of help from anything else, really, within within the action, etc. Okay, Jessica, talk us through sweet tea. Again, the world needs to know about this, although I will actually add the caveat that this is probably something you need to actually brush your teeth frequently and not consume excessively if you actually decide to participate in the sweet tea ceremony.
Yes, it's a very sacred ceremony here in the US. It's basically black tea, and you like dump a ton of sugar in it. And
that is that literally a ton of sugar? I mean, is it a metric ton?
Why not? It's basically that. And it's like this beautiful amber color, and you put ice in. You always have to serve it with ice, always cold, and it's just amazing on a hot day. It's very, very sweet.
Okay, well, there's the descriptor. I think we managed to get most of it. Katie, is that going to be a possible business opportunity for opening up in Erdington, part of Birmingham, a branch of sweet tea manufacturing?
I'd give it a try, yeah.
Okay.
Sounds very much like iced tea.
Like what tea, Katie?
Iced tea.
Yeah. Alice, you may not be a tea drinker at all. And let's face it, if you're actually waiting for coffee at the coffee stands outside the University of Lincoln, you might have to wait several hours before they even get round to actually making the coffee. But that's by the by. Sorry, no names, but it was quite a wait we actually had. What about sweet tea for yourself?
I mean, I've never really tried sweet tea, but just like normal English tea, I don't really like hot tea. I haven't really tried iced tea or sweet tea, though, so might give it a try. I'm a coffee person, really.
Yeah. Well, you know, that caffeine can actually be used for good or ill. Now, one of the things I did mention, Alice, that we were going to talk about, before we actually thought we might be joined by musician David Scher. He's probably lost somewhere. He's probably killing time. You know, he's been arrested for it, and he's probably doing jail time. Sorry, no. A slurrer's opinion, we heard it earlier, and I'm sure David will actually return. But Alice, talk us through, because I don't think either Katie or Jessica had the opportunity that you did, because it was relatively just to open up for yourself, etc., to take part in this WOW event, which gave you a taster of academic life and a chance to actually meet folks such as myself, poor soul. I'm speaking about Alice, obviously, at this point. Over the course of a few days last week. So what did you do with respect to that, and how did you find it?
Oh, honestly, I am so glad that I went, because it made me feel so much better about starting uni. So it's like this transitional summer school that they do for like anyone with special educational needs or like anxiety or anything. And you basically go for 3 days and you do a bunch of activities. You have talks from the Student Wellbeing Centre, Student Support, Students Union. You have talks on like budgeting, you have a taster lecture. We had one on the psychology of strengths or character strengths or something. There's like other activities, like we had a quiz night in the engine shed. That was quite interesting because I'd never been in the engine shed. And basically it's just to meet new people and to feel more at ease about starting uni, because obviously there's a lot of people at university, and I just wanted to go to like meet some new people so that I don't go there feeling totally alone. So in that aspect, it was really good, and I made some very good friends.
Fantastic. So I'll ask you to quantify the qualitative, which is a ridiculous thing, but out of 10, what would you give the whole experience?
Probably an 8, just because I wasn't a massive fan of food.
Well, you know, that's the key thing. And let's face it, the bed linen could have been improved as well. So I just sort of, you know, raised that on your behalf. You know, I mean, not that I was aware of that, but Alice did actually say that, you know, he needs to sort of work on that basis. I mean, Katie, would that have helped you back in the day, but when you were sort of joining at the, you know, back in 2011, 2012?
Yeah, definitely. And if it was around when I went, I would have done it because I did find first year quite difficult. I mean, in Freshers Week, I don't think I barely left the flat. I left like once, but I do know about like the summer schools because BCU here, they done one, and it was for students who have got like anxiety and stuff. Like they stayed a few days to get a feel for the uni. So yeah, I think it's definitely a good idea.
And Jessica, I don't know when you signed up for your North Carolina post, etc. Did you go through something similar? Was there an offer on that opportunity? Was it a case of no? In America, basically, you got to tough it out. It's tough love.
We actually were not given much like preparation. They kind of like plunked us down, and then we're like, we didn't have bedding or anything, and then they were like, good luck finding the shop. So I stumbled my way to Morrison's somehow. So that was a bit confusing.
We probably thought in Lincoln, well, bless her, she's American, she can actually know the whole thing, that'd be fine, you know. And just think, as a creative writer, stumbling your way to Morrison's could actually be the title of your first novel. So you know,
there we go.
And when you started in the States, in the university in the States, was there a precursor at all, or was it a similar thing of just saying, just go for it?
Oh, we actually, yeah, so every university here in the US requires orientation, so you kind of just go for a time to orientation, and we took like pictures on the football field, and we got to play icebreakers, so kind of that way of just kind of warming you up to university life.
And of course, a great difference between the United States of America and Canada, because of course in Canada, icebreakers, you're using real ice. In the States, it's a little less so. And I know whatever Deputy Prime Minister or Deputy President or Vice President Mike Pence would actually say, who knows? Let's not go down that line. Alice, any other sort of questions or comments you want to raise at this point with either Katie or Jess?
I don't think so. Oh, where's the best place to shop for food? That's a good one. Best place to shop for food, because I have no idea where I'm.
Critical question there, Katie, and I know you're probably initially the first one we're going to go to. Where would you point Alice as the best place to shop for food in Lincoln?
I'm going to say Lidl or Morrison's.
And Jessica, are you sticking with Morrison's, or are you going to sort of throw a curly and say, no, you want to go all the way up the hill and check out Waitrose?
Oh, is that to me? Sorry, the internet's trying to interrupt me. Yeah, I have to agree, Morrison's and Lidl. In the middle of the night, I can't tell you how many times I went to Tesco Express, like around the corner. So that place, I think, is really great for midnight snacks.
There we are. I mean, I think it's been an eye-opening system. Who needs David Schur talking about his system killing time? There's always a backup plan from that point of view. Katie, would you like to put those last two questions to Alice and Jessica, please?
Yes. Have you both had a reasonably enjoyable Zoomer today?
Yes.
And can we look forward to connecting with you again?
Yeah, I'd like that.
I would love to.
Excellent. Well, that's all we really needed to know.
Time for another Zoomer on the Midweek Drive for Siren Radio and southsidebroadcasting.podbeam.com. Keeping the COVID-19 bugs at bay.
One of the aspects of the pandemic area that we've been working within, of course, is the move to hopefully acknowledge that actually the benefits might lead to a greener planet in certain instances because of ways forward. But ultimately, we look at the future and we look at the children and where they'll be heading off to in terms of careers and so on. And a recent survey has suggested that over 2/3 of children hope to work in a green job, but 7 in 10 of them say that a lack of knowledge about these careers could stop them from following their passion. Now, to talk about this, we're delighted to welcome the 36th presenter of the BBC television programme, of course, Blue Peter. It's the awesomely talented Lindsay Russell. How are you, Lindsay?
Hi, I'm great, thank you. That was a nice intro.
Well, that's true. And we were right. You are the 36th presenter. I mean, I don't know. You might not have been counting. But I said that could have been 37, could have been 35. What the hey?
No, we take our numbers very seriously when you join. I am indeed 36.
Brilliant. Okay, now let's talk, and probably one of the best, of course, Lindsay. Let's not beat around the bush from that point of view. in terms of this particular finding, which obviously has been echoed by the Institute of Engineering and Technology, or IET, they commissioned this research. This is actually quite concerning, isn't it? Because we've got children who want to go into an environmentally friendly, good job and career, but they just don't know what things are out there.
Yes. It's not good, but in other ways, it is actually less concerning than you'd think, because I think that's where our job as kind of grown-ups and adults come in, where it's like, okay, if these kids don't know how to get these jobs, that is therefore our job to educate them and to help them and to steer them in the right direction. I think what is uplifting is that from that survey, over half of children want to go into jobs that make a difference, and they chose that over, you know, jobs where they make money or jobs where they become famous. Only 7% of kids actually want to go into jobs that make them famous. So I think that's the bit that's really uplifting, is that kids are becoming more aware, they're becoming more green, they know that we need to protect the environment and do everything we can to preserve the planet, you know, that we're on, but they're not quite sure how. So it's good that there's the want and the desire there to go into a green job. But yeah, it is upsetting that they don't know what's out there. And that's where we come in, I think.
Well, of course, the other respect and the other question is, what is a green job? I mean, I'm sure there'll be one or two listeners who think, oh, is that something that you need to work a lot with green fields and so on? Or do you have to wear green and so on? It's a bit more than that, isn't it, Lindsay?
It is. And I've actually learned so much just from doing this project and kind of chatting to these engineers and making these videos that we've been making with the IET. I've learned so much myself. I, at the start of this, probably couldn't have really named more than one green job. And I would have said maybe some kind of engineer. It would have been an awful guess. So actually to chat to an oceanographer and to chat to an aerospace manufacturing engineer and to see that there's environmental engineers and geoscientists and forest and conservation technicians and soil and plant scientists and wave energy producers. I mean, they're all, you know, very cool titles, but it's great to know that there are so many options out there. There's so many routes you can go down where you can go into a job that's green and that actually does make a difference.
We were talking indeed yesterday to a group of students who were based at Imperial College London, and they were sorting out details in terms of how they can actually make car tyres more eco-friendly. I mean, that's just one example, I suppose, of how even something you might not even thought of in terms of making current existing technology more user-friendly to the environment, that's also technically classified as a green job.
Yeah, there really are so many out there. But I think it's important to say as well, you know, this project that we were doing, we wanted to really kind of focus on 5 to 13-year-olds. And for younger kids, I think it is key to say that it starts at home and it starts small. Okay, later it can become, how do we make these tires more green and how do I become a hydrologist? But at the start, it really can be as simple as, are we recycling at home? Could I get involved in a community project with allotments or local litter picking and beach cleanups? And how do I get stuck into activities at home and compost food? And, you know, I think we've got to lead by example, and we've got to show there are eco-friendly ways. You know, you won't change the world overnight or certainly on your own, but you can do it kind of in families, and it really does have to start at home, I think.
Talk to us, Lindsay, about this content series produced by the IET in terms of how that's providing a range of opportunities for children who might not have actually had that information at their fingertips before.
Yeah, it's been so exciting. So we basically teamed up, and obviously with the pandemic going on, it was quite hard to go out and about and meet people, but it was still great. We did so many kind of Zoom chats with, like I said, with aerospace engineers and with people in different green jobs. And really it was just about finding out kind of what they do, how they got into their job, what their job actually means, because I think a lot of these titles can sound a bit daunting and a bit overwhelming. We put their job titles to kids aged 5 to 13 and just got them to guess, you know, what an aerospace manufacturing engineer does. And some of the guesses were spot on, others were just really adorable. Like, maybe they saved the moon. And then it was nice that some kids as well just said, you know what, I have no idea. So that was our whole aim. And it was us just going, we know that a lot of you don't have any idea. And that's where we want to help you. But it's been so fun putting it together. And genuinely for me as well, it's just been eye-opening and it's really, really interesting.
If you weren't an awesome broadcaster, Lindsay, which one of the green jobs in terms of those top jobs that we talked about, oceanographer, environmental engineer, geoscientist, clean car engineer, natural scientist, etc., which one would have appealed to your good self or might still do, because you could combine both, I'm sure?
That's a really good question. I mean, oceanographer is a cool title just because it makes you sound like you're scuba diving all day and cleaning up the ocean, which I think is pretty awesome. So I would take that for the title, but I think I would quite enjoy maybe a hydrologist or a conservation scientist, or to be honest, I would love any job. And that's the great thing about these jobs. I would love to do anything where you're getting out and about and you feel like, you know, you're making a difference. You're not behind a desk. That's always been my thing. That's all I really care about. So as long as I was out and about in the environment, in the fresh air, I'd be happy.
And of course, the great thing about this with respect to the IET's involvement, it addresses that science, technology, engineering, maths issue that we're regularly talking about, and actually demonstrates some of the top tips. I was very impressed with the suggestion that, you know, children who are interested in following this thing through can get involved with local community projects, as you said. You can deal with composting food waste, again, as we mentioned. Talk to people and find out sort of what folk are already doing in their area, presumably.
That's the thing. And we've also, you know, I think we have to admit that, I don't know about you, but when I was at school, being green and focusing on the planet and the environment and how much we have to do, it wasn't something that came up a lot in classes. It wasn't really something we learned about. And I dare say it wasn't really something that people cared about then. And I think what's great now is that that is a huge part of the syllabus now. It's a huge part of children's learning. It's a massive part of going to school now, is caring about the environment, learning about the environment. You know, kids seeing people like Greta Thunberg on the TV and going, I want to be like that. It's really exciting that there's all this kind of energy and this passion around the environment now. It's something that I'm now very passionate about, because we don't get a planet B and we have to act now. So I think that's been really, really great to see. But that, like you said, there's so much you can do in your local area. There's so much you can even do at home with recycling. There's a lot to do, but it is all about having a conversation. It's about us grown up saying, you know what, we maybe should have cared about this a bit more, but we can do our bit now and we can help educate and we can have a conversation about it.
Yeah, in my own case, Lindsay, I've got to confess, Being Green for so many years was a song by Kermit the Frog, which I thought was a great song, but, you know, nothing to do with the environment. Or maybe it is. I don't know. It was just thought.
Maybe there's a hidden message there. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll go into the semiotics of Kermit the Frog at another time. Where can people go to find out further information, Lindsay, about what we've been talking about today with the IET and these videos?
So I'm really excited to say episode 1 is already up. So it's on the IET's website. You can also find it if you just type into your search engine, Engineer a Better World. You will find all the info there. And it's going to be taking over my Instagram as well today and for a bit of next week. So essentially you're being inundated with green info everywhere.
Well, I was going to say, obviously, at Lindsay J. Russell, presumably the official Instagram account, to find out further details about this and more fantastic stuff. Two final questions to actually wrap up with, Lindsay. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic Zoomer with us today? Has it been okay for you?
Oh, it's been great.
This is good. It's our customer satisfaction, Lindsay. You know, these days, I'm sure it'll only be a matter of time before you'll finish every Blue Peter with a "do you want a hashtag smiley face" or various other bits and pieces at the end of this. But it will always be smiley face when you're presenting Blue Peter. So the final question is, will you come back again and join us in the not too distant future?
I would love to.
Lindsay Russell, many, many thanks indeed. Keep on keeping on and keep green.